call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Wednesday to you. It is Wake Up Call SB Nation Radio. And coming up on the show today, we get the latest from the Patrick Mahomes concussion protocol watch. What could happen today? That's expected to happen today, but still in the process of getting him cleared to play Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. As I said earlier this week, the protocol and all of the elements within the protocol are going to be on spotlight the whole entire week. Maybe you didn't care what went on. Just make sure your player got cleared. Now people are really focused on the steps that it takes to get out of it as Kansas City gears up for its third straight AFC Championship game against Buffalo. Also, Jared Porter, the Mets general manager that was fired, this has become a fascinating look at what happened to him from 2016 all the way up until Steve Cohen fired him for sending awful text messages and pictures to a female baseball reporter. We'll talk a little bit about this story as it's starting to get a little bit more steam. Great reporting, by the way, on this story. And then more on the Tennessee recruiting scandal, because even though it's a very kind of localized college football story, it's still a larger conversation about how recruits are being brought in and what, and the, kind of the more funny angle to this Tennessee recruiting scandal. But there's a larger picture here. This isn't the only recruiting scandal that we've talked about in the last couple years in college sports, but a couple of those guys that we talked about still are employed. So Jeremy Pruitt went bye-bye for the reason coaches go bye-bye, and we'll talk about that next. Also, George Springer has found a new baseball home as he hits the Toronto Blue Jays, and this could be a really interesting 2021 exodus for the city of Houston if Deshaun Watson is finally traded. That is all coming up today on the show. And of course, the AFC and the NFC championship games are going to be on the spotlight as not only Mahomes and the Chiefs, as we talk about the protocol, but also Brady and Rodgers and the rematch from a week six matchup in which Tom Brady and the Buccaneers really put a wallop on Green Bay. Does it matter? Well, Aaron Rodgers had something to say about that. We got that coming up for you as well. So when we come back, what the steps are for Mahomes to take the field today in practice in Kansas City. That's next in Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you can be with us as we continue along on a Wednesday. Everybody's temperature varies throughout the day. It's important that you screen for fever in the morning and in the evening. Fever is a sign of COVID-19. Stay safe with the Exogen temporal scanner. All right, so again, Patrick Mahomes staying in the protocol. And look, it wouldn't be the protocol if he was just allowed to leave it on Monday or Tuesday. But there's a possibility he returns to practice today on a limited basis, and that's part of the protocol. So don't read into Mahomes practicing on Wednesday, and he should be a lock to return on Sunday. That's kind of part of the deal. You pass certain steps. One of the steps is light workouts. So that's what's expected today. And it's funny because, you know, I could come on here and say, well, I just got a gut feeling that he's going to play on Sunday. In reality, I have no idea how the protocol is working. Like, I don't know what they're looking for. I don't know what they're thinking as he's going through these various tests. Andy Reid feels like he's overcome some big steps, but I don't even know how to take it from Andy Reid's perspective. Because, again, the protocol is kind of still is a mystery. And that's why this week has been really interesting, because he's the biggest name to go through it at this critical time. So, it is a perfect storm of the star athlete, most important position in the sport, And he's going through this at a time where we are going to be crowning conference champions and setting up the matchup for Super Bowl 55. So with that being said, this is not like if he had gone through the concussion protocol in week 6, where maybe your team isn't playing Kansas City. So you don't really care if Patrick Mahomes is playing or not. Maybe you're not focused on the concussion protocol. But this week, everybody kind of is, because we want to know what the matchup on Sunday is going to look like when they face Buffalo. Sean McDermott of the Bills says he looked prepared for two quarterbacks. What Chad Henne does, what Patrick Mahomes does. I can only imagine how difficult that must be, right? But to prepare for two quarterbacks who are almost the exact opposite of one another. Here's what we're going to do when Chad Henne plays, and then we're going to change up everything if Patrick Mahomes plays. There is no similarity between these two guys whatsoever. So I can make sure Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott are on the same defensive page. But again, from a competitive standpoint, I think most of us would like to see Mahomes in this game. I think from injuries are kind of the X factor all the time, right? I mean, you get these situations where you feel like you got a really good matchup, and then there's an injury that happens the week before, and then it sort of puts a damper on it. That's always an issue when it comes to the football games about the matchups. But I think we're going to be. I just got this feeling that Patrick Mahomes is going to be able to play and be starting for Kansas City. And I think for the league, it's a good news, because the Chad Henne Josh Allen matchup isn't as sexy as the Patrick Mahomes Josh Allen matchup that I think we'd like to see. And as far as this game goes, last week Buffalo played Baltimore, a completely different team who doesn't throw the ball very much. And so what they did was, one of the strategies that Buffalo used against the Ravens was try to put the Ravens in situations where they were going to be in third and long, right? So you're trying to get them, so to try to contain them enough so that there is a more than likely option that on third and 7 that they are going to throw the football, something that they don't do very well. And for the most part, Buffalo succeeded. It was actually a very good defensive game plan. But what they weren't getting in that game was the flip side, which was, all right, look, we're doing a pretty good job of containing this Ravens team. Now let's get Josh Allen and the offense rolling along, put some points on the board, and really get moving. And that did not happen for them. And the Ravens did their part defensively. And the big turning point of the game was the interception return for the touchdown, the long interception return for a touchdown that sort of put the Bills away. If I'm rooting for Buffalo in this game, or if I'm angling towards Buffalo in this game against a healthy or somewhat healthy Patrick Mahomes, I have to be concerned about my offense turning things around in this postseason, because we have not seen Buffalo's offense be Buffalo's offense that we've seen close out the regular season. Right, these double-digit victories, absolutely efficient. And again, they're playing better teams in the postseason, so don't get me wrong. But at the same time, Buffalo's offense hasn't really done much, either against the Colts or against the Ravens. And that's got to be problematic, because you're not shutting down Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Now, you might do things to befuddle them enough so they're putting 23 on the board or 24 on the board or 27 on the board. But they're not going to put 3 on the board like Baltimore did. And if you're Buffalo, It is putting out 100% effort on the defensive side of the ball, but you need relief on the offensive side. It's very similar to the Steelers, right? When the Steelers played the Browns, right? What was happening in that second half, which is why I was angry that Tomlin punted, was that you can only ask your defense, and this really goes for a lot of teams, you can only ask your defense to do so much. Right, if you're not providing some offensive relief, eventually that defense breaks. Now, for Buffalo, it didn't break against the Ravens, but against Kansas City, it's going to. If they get a number of stops, or they force a turnover, or man, things go their way defensively, how likely is Buffalo going to be to put a 60-minute game together against what Kansas City does? It just isn't going to happen. But what can happen is just enough stops, just enough turnovers, possibly, to sort of keep you in a game where you let the offense go. Now get to work. Get to work and make good of what we're doing here. And if you don't help your defense out, it just can't possibly hold off what Kansas City can do offensively. And I think that's the danger to the Bills. is Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, and this offense has got to find a way to be a lot better in this game than they've been in the last two, even though they won both of those games. You're not going to rely on Patrick Mahomes throwing an interception in the red zone that is going to be returned 100 yards for a touchdown. It's more than likely that every time they get down the field, they'll put points on the board, whether they get stopped for just kick a field goal or they score. And I think that to me is where, you know, the decision, whatever happens with Patrick Mahomes plays so much. It's not so much Kansas City and our entertainment, but how Buffalo prepares for this game, because Chad Henne is such a different beast in terms of playing the position. There's so many things he can't do because he's not even close on that level to what Mahomes does. But in that scenario, I think you can ask your defense to do a lot more. It's just the offense needs to produce for Buffalo or they're not going to be in this game, even if they have a good defensive performance, right? And that would be the hardest pill to swallow, I think, if you're the Bills, is that if you play against Patrick Mahomes and you do hold him to 24 points, you're going to feel like you left something out if you lose 24-20. Because Buffalo should, you know, win a game if they can contain Kansas City to something in the low 20s. But we'll see this week. Again, this concussion protocol has been interesting to watch because you're seeing a lot of people making predictions and a lot of people making statements on something we really don't know a lot yet. And as I said yesterday, I don't want to be the independent neurologist to pull this out. I really don't.
No, and at the same time, this is probably the first, I won't say the first high profile because we've had other guys in concussion protocol, but this is the one that probably has the most eyes on it.
Yeah, sure.
So, and again, you want to make sure you get it right.
You're going to see, again, you started seeing it on Monday, how many websites, sports websites started, hey, this is exactly what's going to happen. Maybe you haven't been wanting to know this, but I bet you know it now. Here are the steps, the five steps it's going to take for Mahomes to be clear.
I didn't even know there were just five.
Yeah, you'll start seeing You'll start seeing little vignettes on TV. Okay, this is what happens. We're going to talk to this, you know, these group of people that do this protocol, and this is what's going to happen because there's a lot of interest now in exactly how this plays out. Now, again, you know, fans are short for fanatic, and people's brains don't really, operate on a logistic level. I wouldn't want to be the guy that has to make that decision because it's not going to be pretty if you decide that Mahomes' health could be in jeopardy if he plays a football game, one of the most important football games. And again, when it comes to the protocol, because I don't know what they're looking for. I don't know what it means to be cleared, right? I mean, I had this problem with my son when he had a concussion. I never knew, all right, so when can he do anything, right? I mean, and you're asking a group to kind of evaluate this guy for the week. The stakes are high. So it's not, you know, it's not like, all right, you're going to miss week six, right? If you miss this game, Kansas City may not go to the Super Bowl. And in that scenario, it's got to be a tough decision to make where you go, okay, remember we talk about this, what percentage of the backup is still, you know, of the starter is still better than 100% of your backup. Well, does he get cleared 100%, like, what is there a small tight, is there any sort of wiggle room here, or is it absolute 100% cleared? Like, I don't know. I mean, I would assume that you are doing it exactly the same way as you would if it was a week six football game, but I'm not 100% sure because again, the stakes are pretty high. All right. Coming up next, yesterday in the good, the bad, and the dumb, we talked about Jared Porter. This story has got a lot of legs. We'll talk about this next, about the demise of a promising young general manager who really screwed up 4 years ago. That's next on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
A weak battery could leave you stranded. Don't take a chance. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test that battery free of charge, and if it needs to be replaced, Their professional parts people will help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So this Jared Porter, we did this yesterday in The Good, the Bad, and the Dumb, but my goodness, did it have legs yesterday.
A bigger story than I thought.
It was a huge deal. Yeah, we just like, hey, here's a general manager got fired, sent some nasty pictures to a, you know, sexual pictures to a reporter. Dumb move, he gets fired. Yeah. And then yesterday, it started exploding into a larger conversation. And we, you know, he is done with baseball. He's got to find a new career because he's not coming back to this sport. And I know, look, a lot of us will go, I don't know, time will tell. But I don't think you overcome this. I really don't. I think when it comes to general managers, there are 30 of them. And there's always somebody coming up the ranks, right? There's a Jared Porter right now who is a young scout who is going to be a general manager somewhere. And he's not going to be able to compete when the dust settles on this and he does some sort of rehabilitation of his life. He is not going to be able to overcome this. And I don't know how he works in a sport after all of this scandal. I mean, this exploded yesterday. I mean, just from, and it wasn't just, wow, look what this guy did in 2016. There was a larger conversation of what it's like to be a female reporter in Major League Baseball and the misogyny that goes on in a limited capacity for women who are covering this sport. I mean, this guy meets this female reporter when he's with the Cubs and he sends her, what was it, over 60 texts?
Yeah.
60 messages unsolicited. Then he sends this lewd photo to her. Now she is from another country. She moved to the United States to cover baseball. And the angle of this story, which was interesting to me, was she was so horrified by these messages and these pictures, but she came from a country where, you know, women aren't, they're not the victim in these scenarios when you raise accusations against men. She did not grow up in a country where you could do that and get justice. You would do that and get accused and you would get vilified if you did that. So she did not want to make a lot of this based on her background. And so this remained silent until Jared Porter became the general manager of the Mets. And then it popped. And now he's out of a job. I mean, amazing. 17 pictures he sent to her. The 17th was the beep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. We didn't grow up in an era where you send barrages of text messages hoping to woo someone.
Right.
But I would imagine, you know, after 10 or 15, I'd just give up and go, okay.
Yeah, well,
I don't even think I would reach 10 or 15.
But here's the thing. This is what I was thinking about yesterday. Look, didn't we already learn this? Like, didn't we go through this with Brett Favre and a number of other people that this comes back to bite you? Do not do this. I mean, it's amazing that people are still doing this thinking it's not going to come back to haunt them.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's
like his mentality was, this is not going to come back and ruin my career.
No, just, I mean, it was almost like he went about it because it was normal.
Yeah.
In his world.
Right. And that's the problem. And so imagine this. And look, and I don't feel sorry for him. He has no one to blame but himself, but he's 41 and he got his goal. He became a Major League Baseball general manager, and he became a general manager of the new Mets, right? He became Steve Cohen's general manager of an organization that has got rid of the Wilpons, trying to head in a different direction, a billionaire owner that is a super fan of the team he bought. So there's money to be spent. There's a roster to build. There is going to be a different approach to the Mets than ever before. Now, be honest with you, I don't even care about that from a standpoint of being a general manager. He could have been a general manager of any dysfunctional baseball team. The fact that he made it is an accomplishment. But on the way up the ranks, he did not think these text messages and these pictures, or the one picture, was so inappropriate that it would derail his career. Can you imagine the conversation he had to have with Sandy Alderson, telling Sandy Alderson, yeah, these are real. This is a real story. I did this. I can't deny it. And knowing his career was over. And again, knowing his career was over. That was it. How is he over? I don't know what he does next. I don't know how he overcomes this.
Maybe he becomes a scout for a Venezuelan team.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. Because he's reached that area where it's untouchable. Yeah, where it's a Art Briles situation, where if he is to get hired, the community is going to be outraged by it. And, you know, he probably will get fired if he gets hired. Or even if there's a hint of him having a meeting, he's, you know, the community is going to be outraged by it. And remind everyone, like, no, you want this guy on your staff?
Yeah, exactly.
He's done.
Well, he did, you know, the article that Mina Kimes put together with Jeff Passan, I thought was really good. It's long, but it's well worth the read. There was a pleasurable exchange between the two. Like, she sent him a picture, he sent a picture, and whatnot. But then it started to kind of derail. It kind of got a little bit more lewd. You know, it's like anything else. I guess you're starting out in a relationship. You think you're winning the relationship. You start getting a little bit more bold, a little bit more, oh, let's see if we can push the boundary, push the boundary, push the boundary. He asked her if she was married. He said she was pretty, right? I mean, he kept, then the text messages, I guess, started to stop, and he just kept going and going and going and going, and then finally sent the picture. But it went from pleasant exchange to he was really annoying her and bothering her and really getting more and more aggressive throughout the text messages. But you're right. It's amazing. You know, listen, I grew up at a time, if I wanted to ask a girl out, I had to call their phone at home. And I didn't know if the dad was going to answer. You know, you call up, click. Hello. Oh, yeah. You know, now you've got the girl's personal phone. The only person that should be, you know, answering is her, you think, on the other end. You know, it's, you know, and again, it's a different culture. It's a different world in terms of texting and sending texts. But he should have known better. There is no excuse for this from a standpoint of, yeah, I thought she led me on. She didn't lead him on. He actually was sending text after text after text after text, and then just got more and more aggressive with it. And now he's done. Jessica Mendoza was telling a story yesterday, which I thought was kind of fascinating, because she was saying how it is so tough for female reporters, because when you are covering baseball on a daily basis, right, when you're a beat reporter, and I've known a number of female reporters like covering the Rockies. When I was covering the Rockies, I was at probably 30, 35 games a year. Right. I would go sometimes even more than that. And you get to meet all sorts of people because they're in town for like a weekend. Right. So they're in town for like 3 days, 4 days. And you see the same people when the team comes to town. I met a lot of female reporters from different newspapers, websites or whatnot covering baseball. But one of the things that she had said was you form these relationships with the players because you're looking for, you know, to better your job. You want contact with them because you want to get scoops. So you try to get personal numbers because there is a relationship between player and traveling media, right? They see these guys every single day. And so Jessica was saying how one reporter she would talk to went out, got a number of a pending free agent. And she was trying to get a story, and she wanted to contact him for the story about your free agency and workouts and coming back from an injury and what the market may bear and all, you know, kind of the typical what's going to happen to you this offseason story. She was trying to get his number to try to contact him for a story. The player assumed she wanted to date. The player assumed that when she contacted him, that they were going to go out to dinner or she wanted to have a relationship with him. That was the mindset of the player. How difficult is that? To try to be professional and the person on the other end thinks, oh no, you wanted something romantic. Oh, I'm sorry. I gave you my number because I thought we would go and hang out. Not because you wanted to ask me about my, you know, oblique injury that leads to this rehab, that leads to this market value of this going to, you know, it's a difficult journey. And so this female reporter who Jared Porter was texting is trying to make contacts in the league, trying to get to know people in the league. Maybe she was friendly with them on that basis. And then he went, oh, you're friendly with me? The only reason you're friendly with me or wanting to know who I am is because you want to have a relationship with me. When she is talking to a guy that is on the team, who's working for the team that just won the World Series for the first time in 100 plus years in the Chicago Cubs. Man, no, I mean, it's just, again, that story just took off like wildfire yesterday. All right, coming up, speaking of baseball, George Springer has left for Toronto. This could be a massive exodus for the city of Houston. Next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up in 1 hour, we're going to talk to Jerry Palm, some college basketball. I'll give you a little primer into the stretch run of the season as we head into the last, what was it, it will be 6 weeks, I would assume. No, maybe a little more than that, for 2 months.
Need to find out if three blue bloods can make it.
Yeah, exactly. Because Kentucky, Duke, and North Carolina all unranked for like the first time since the 60s, like 68 or something. I basically said my lifetime when I saw that. I was like, so I basically never seen this in the history of my life that these three programs are not ranked in the AP poll.
At least one of them was ranked. Yeah. You and I were born.
I've got a question about Alabama because, you know, we know Alabama is so unbelievable in football. Last night, they killed LSU by 30 points, and they are unbeaten in SEC play. And they made 23 three-point field goals in a 40-minute basketball game.
See, but wouldn't that make sense for them to have a good team?
What, Alabama?
Yeah.
Well, you're not really. It's really hard to be both really good at one sport and really good at the other sport.
But, I mean, you know, a success of one program, wouldn't that kind of...
No. Duke's never been good at football. I mean, Duke's had a couple of good years, but they've never been good at football. Sometimes it is. Like, Florida won the national championship in basketball in Florida in one year. But it's really rare. And Ohio State has had good football teams and good basketball teams. But it's not... It's
not
really
as common
odd.
As
it's
I'd
not
like
as,
to think
no,
it would be.
No, it's not as common. I mean, look, in the end, if you're putting a lot of money into a program, Michigan could be good and their basketball team could be good, et cetera, et cetera. But for the most part, you don't really get like, you know, when Florida won titles, you know, football and basketball, it's kind of rare that
occurs. I just wonder if there would be any spillover because, I mean, you know, there's a lot of college kids who will choose a school, a college they want to go to based on the success of the football team.
But they don't choose it if they play basketball. They choose it for the success of the basketball team.
Non-athletes.
You know, how does that transcend to basketball success?
Well, I mean, you know, Duke has a good attendance, right? Or North Carolina has a good attendance. That's why I'm saying. I mean, you know, they're a named school because of who they are. You know, maybe it's just my thinking, but they're a named school because of who they are in sports.
Oh yeah, but I don't. I'm sorry if I'm missing this. I don't know how.
What I'm saying is,
like, when your attendance, like, how does it correlate to your recruiting?
It has nothing to do with the athletes. I'm saying the normal kid just going to school.
So how does that
maybe more opt to go into, you know, because it's a bigger name. Like, you know, if I said, hey, I'm going to Alabama versus,
oh, that's
hey,
true.
I'm going to, you know, Tuscaloosa University.
That's true. No doubt. But I. How does that correlate to having both football and basketball good?
Well, that's why I'm thinking that if you had a really successful football program, like, you know, the Alabama has over the last decade, that there would be some spillover because you'd have a, you know, basketball player, an up-and-coming basketball player, be like, you know what, you know, Alabama has a good – I know that, you know, they would much rather – if they were a really good player, they'd probably want to go to Kentucky or North Carolina.
I think the mentality is I don't care about anything other than me. If I'm a five-star athlete – basketball player, where I go to play and be successful and get the hell out of there to go to the NBA.
Well, that should change then.
You know, so I think most of them are just like,
I need this narrative to fit my thinking.
Yeah, no. I think it's interesting with all the money that you put into facilities. But I know that there's resentment a lot of times when a lot of the resources goes to one sport and not necessarily the other. You hear coaches complain about this all the time. I remember Rick Barnes, who's at Tennessee now, was at Clemson. And I remember he was complaining about how much emphasis Clemson had in football. And I remember people going, you know, you went to a football school. And then he was like at Texas and was like, you know, you went, what do you keep doing this for? You keep going to these football schools and trying to turn the basketball team around. And he did. He landed at Tennessee. And that's exactly what happened. Tennessee is in the top 10, even though they lost last night. And his football team is they've been in shambles for almost 20 years. So it does. I'm a little surprised it doesn't happen more to the big money programs, right? Like Ohio State, Michigan, places like that. But Alabama's playing pretty really good basketball right now. Really good. And Nate Oates has done a fantastic job there since he arrived.
Yeah, they had a good program a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, Avery Johnson was their coach, yeah. And they weren't bad. They were pretty good, yeah. The problem is, and I hate to say it like this because I don't want to put down SEC basketball, but it's one thing to look really good in that conference and then not be really good on the larger scale.
Right.
Kentucky's a different beast because Kentucky really does just keep bringing in McDonald's All-Americans, which is why their struggle this year is surprising. But you expect this, right? Every now and then, the formula isn't going to work, right? You can't just keep revamping your roster every year and hitting a home run. Eventually, it's going to, you know, fall apart a little bit. But sometimes you go, okay, in the SEC, they're good, but are they national championship good? And we asked that, you know, about Florida a couple of years ago when Billy Donovan was there, Tennessee last couple of seasons, and Alabama now this year. All right. So George Springer is gone from Houston. He has signed a 6-year, $150 million deal with the Toronto Blue Jays. So when you add the fact that James Harden was traded last week,
yep.
Deshaun Watson is on the trading block, and if that goes down, George Springer has now left. These are major Houston sports stars.
Yeah.
I was trying to rack my brain to find the quickest, most important exodus of athletes from a city in that short of a time. I really couldn't think of one.
No.
Where a city has lost three major, could lose. Now, Deshaun Watson has not been traded, so let's make this clear. This is all, if he is.
Speculation.
All speculation. If he is.
There's a lot of talk on it.
What city would have had that kind of depletion in that short of amount of time?
I don't think there is one.
Between free agency and trades, this has got to be devastating.
I mean, you know, there you see it from time to time. Like the Red Sox a few years ago unloaded like half their team to the Dodgers.
Right.
But that was, you know, that's not on this scale.
It's not on this. Again, you could find like a three or four sports city and, you know, like in Pittsburgh, right? Steelers, Pirates, Penguins, and see a player here, a player there, and a player here leaving, right? That's fine. But it would be as if, like, you know, Ben Roethlisberger and, you know, Sidney Crosby and I don't know whoever is the superstar of the Pirates leaving in a 3-week period or a 2-week period.
Right.
If Deshaun Watson goes, I think it's the most incredible sports exodus of a city in the history of organized sports, and that's going to take more research on my part to narrow that down. But it has that feeling like this is a huge problem.
I did stumble across a list though that somebody put together of Houston of people who have left the Houston sports scene since last year, January 2020.
So a calendar year.
A calendar year.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Jeff Luhnow.
Yep.
And A.J. Hinch.
Yeah.
Not by their doing, but they were kicked to the curb. DeAndre Hopkins.
Of course.
Mike D'Antoni.
Wow.
Bill O'Brien. Daryl Morey. Roberto Osuna. Josh Reddick. Russell Westbrook. James Harden. George Springer.
That's incredible. Forget those three guys I just mentioned. That is an incredible list.
Yeah.
That is an incredible exodus.
Now,
that's unreal.
You can take your idea of, like, you know, name three stars in a 3 to 4 week period. This is just do a calendar year of how many big name guys. I mean, you know, two of them, obviously, in Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch, you know, they were kind of forced to the curb.
Right.
You know, we understand that story, but I mean, in a calendar year, the Astros, Texans, and Rockets all lost their manager/head coaches.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. In a calendar year, all of the head coaches of the three teams have been gone.
I can't think of a team. I can't think of that ever happening to a city.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's... I mean, and you're right. The two general managers, and by the way, the Houston, you could just put Bill O'Brien in the general manager column.
That's true.
Right? So if you want to just kind of have him do double duty.
All three head coaches, all three general managers.
Within a calendar year.
Within a calendar year are gone.
Yeah. And then major superstars with major names and major pull.
Yeah.
Hopkins, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, George Springer, even Josh Reddick. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Golly.
I mean, Roberto Osuna maybe is a stretch.
Yeah, well, he was a controversial signing anyway.
Yeah.
Remember, he was coming in with a domestic problem.
But no, I didn't even think about it. All three coaches, all three general managers of those sports teams.
It's unreal. And again, you add Deshaun Watson to that list, if indeed that trade gets pulled by Nick Caserio, then it's one of the most incredible departures of a city in sports history.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It's unreal. But it's kind of, you know, again, you're right. Each circumstance was different. And I think that's what makes kind of the list more interesting is that there are little stories in each one, right?
Yes.
I mean, like what was it called? Trash can gate. What was it called? The sign ceiling scandal. What gate did we give that? Did they give it a gate?
I don't know if they ever gave it a gate.
Nah, the sign stealing scandal leads to the departure
in the trash can.
Of Hinch and Luhnow, right? You got the Rockets sort of restructuring everything. So Morey leaves and Harden later is traded. Russell Westbrook is gone as they revamp.
D'Antoni is fired.
D'Antoni is, right? Yeah, D'Antoni is like a
mutual
parting of the ways.
Parting the ways.
The Texans, without really a rudder guiding the ship properly, gets rid of DeAndre Hopkins, and then Bill O'Brien is let go, and now Deshaun Watson wants a trade, and you know it's like there are different angles to each one. You know, George Springer just leaves for free agency, 6 years, $150 million dollars.
A normal way to leave.
Just a normal way to leave an organization.
But when you wrap it up into this situation, it's like, okay, it's not normal.
Yeah, when you put it into the pile, yeah, it just adds, like, it isn't just a simple, well, you know, we couldn't keep him. He wanted more money. They offered him more money. It's like, no. There's a huge problem in Houston. Everybody's departing
the
city.
Everyone wants out.
Everybody wants out now.
And remember, it was just, what, last year, I think we were talking about this. We were talking about Houston's on the verge of becoming title town.
It was, there was a window of time where they were the hottest sports city in America, maybe.
Right.
If you want to kind of kick Boston, because they always were in that conversation.
No, but I mean, you look
But like, even then, the Astros won the World Series.
The Rockets were a Chris Paul hamstring away from... Probably winning the NBA
Finals.
Probably
winning the whole thing, right? Beating Golden State and probably winning the whole
thing. Yeah, because that was the finals. We all came to the agreement that, that Western Conference Final was the final because both those teams were going to beat the Cavaliers. And then the Texans were making playoffs.
And then the Texans were making the postseason and just were, they have this bright young quarterback. And boy, I'll tell you right now, they're just on the doorstep. J.J. Watt, if he just is healthy and oh my, you're right. That's the conversation we were having about Houston sports for a good little chunk of time. There was a good little period of time there.
And now we're back to square one going, who's in charge?
Yeah, who's running anything? I need a list of who's who. Who's running this team now? Who's coaching this team now? It's crazy.
Who's playing for this team now?
That's right. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We'd love to hear from you. This hour of Wake Up Call is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Super Bowl Square sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. Michael on Twitter, theory why colleges have won successful program. Successful basketball coaches do not go to programs with successful football programs because of funding. The football programs are first in funding. Basketball coaches do not want to be second. Yeah, that's kind of true. I mean, you think about it. I mean, there's, you know, Texas might be different because Texas is good, you know, has, well, no matter how, how that football program is that's always going to be really highly funded, and Shaka Smart has got Texas in the top five. But for the most part, you're right. I mean, Kentucky has – every time Kentucky makes a bowl game, I feel like it's celebratory because they're just not that – you know.
Well, I mean, you can go down the list. Yeah. You know, I'll just use my neck of the woods, my old neck of the woods, UCLA and USC.
Yeah, sure.
One's always been good and one's for it. The other one's always good and another.
There's a big scale that kind of flips back and forth. You obviously want both of them to be good if you're an alumni. Obviously, you
You want to be proud.
You want to be – yeah, exactly.
Like for all those people, you know, who could hang their hat. Yeah, I know. You know, certain someone who is an alumnus of Florida.
Yeah,
that's right. Just what a great year they had.
You're right. I couldn't believe they won the football and basketball championship in the same year. I could not believe that actually occurred in my lifetime. I was like, oh my God, really? I mean, they had Urban Meyer and Billy Donovan. They were just guiding these programs. But the whole thing about you think about. A program like Kentucky, right? That is just, I urge people, like, if you have an opportunity to go to an SEC championship game now without, you know, when COVID calms down, you would be blown away how it's like a caravan of people Kentucky brings to games. My brother told me a story once that the SEC title championship was in Atlanta one year, and Kentucky fans invade Atlanta. They call it Catlanta. And he goes, one year they lost. They lost like in, I don't know, first round, second round, whatever. Just a kind of an inexplicit loss. And Kentucky fans were just walking around Atlanta handing the tickets to the championship game to people for free. You want this? I don't need this. I'm leaving. Like just waves and waves of fans that descend. When it comes to Nashville, it is a sea of blue on Broadway. They come without tickets just to be around in hopes that somebody might have one for sale. They make the pilgrimage. It is amazing. It's unbelievable. And you think about, you can't get that kind of enthusiasm. You can't move that to the football team to sort of bring up the football team into an SEC power. It's funny how that works. Wake up call continuing. It's on a Wednesday. Sports Map Radio.